Lakers Carpool is brought to you by Hook Products USA. Truck lovers, tow hook covers finally are here. Introducing Tokes, a first-of-its-kind tow hook cover that is a great way to personalize your truck's factory tow hooks. Tokes are made in the USA out of high-grade silicone rubber that clasps right over your truck's factory tow hooks so it installs in seconds and no tools are needed. With colors red, white, blue, pink, and amber, and costing just $34.95 per pair, Tokes are a unique and affordable way to customize your truck. Go to hookproductsusa.com and head over to the compatibility tool to make sure that Tokes will fit over your truck's tow hooks. After that, checkout is super easy and your truck will be rocking its Tokes in no time. Again, that's hookproductsusa.com for Tokes, the original tow hook cover. Lakers Carpool. My name is James Brooks. I'm your host. Thanks for joining me on today's episode. This is our first real off-season episode of the 2023 off-season. Talked a little bit about off-season stuff in my last episode, but that was more of like a recapping the end of the season, the last game of the season, the Western Conference Finals, all that good stuff. So the good news is we don't have to, we can have a stress-free finals, which will be fun. You know, just as a basketball fan, it's fun to watch the finals no matter who's in it, but we don't have to worry about the Celtics winning because they lost in Game 7 at home to the Miami Heat. They got blown out, which was pretty insane. You know, I feel like a lot of us, after the Heat went up 3-0, we thought, oh, for sure, you know, the Celtics aren't going to make it. Then the Celtics go on and win three games in a row. They tie the series up 3-3, force a Game 7 at home. And I think most of us kind of felt like, all right, this is done. You know, the Celtics, they're going to be in the finals. And whether the Celtics or the Heat are in the finals, I liked the Nuggets' chances personally. I feel like they're the favorites to win, and it doesn't really matter who they play, but you never know what's going to happen. And the Celtics being in the finals and the Lakers not being in the finals is no fun to watch, and it's just a little more stress there. So we get a stress-free finals between the Heat and the Nuggets. You know, I think I personally kind of like the – I said this before. I mean, I like the Nuggets. I think they're just the best team in the league, as we saw when they played the Lakers. Like, the Lakers are a good team. We beat the number two seed, Grizzlies. We beat, a flawed but decent Warriors team. I mean, Steph Curry is always dangerous. Klay Thompson's always dangerous. Draymond Green. Like, they're always going to be dangerous to go up against. And the Lakers won that series in six games. You know, the Lakers are a good team. And so for them to get swept by the Nuggets, that just shows how good the Nuggets are and how prepared they are to potentially win their first ever NBA Finals. It's a pretty impressive story from the Heat standpoint. You know, they're the first play-in team to make the finals. Obviously, the play-in tournament's only been around for a few years, but they're the first play-in team to ever make the finals. They're an eighth seed. They're going to be going up against the one seed. They beat the one seed Bucks in the East, the fifth seed Knicks, and the two seed Celtics to get to the finals. So they're definitely a cool story. I wouldn't count them out necessarily. They're going to battle, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a four-game sweep, or maybe a gentleman sweep, a game in five games with the Nuggets winning. But, I mean, Jimmy Butler's been crazy. You have Caleb Martin stepping up. He had 20-plus points in Game 7 in Boston to help the Heat win by, like, 20 points in that game. And you just can't count him out. I mean, I think they're going to get Tyler Hero back potentially by Game 3, I saw. You know, he fractured his hand in the first round of the playoffs. So getting him back could be helpful. So you can't count the Heat out. They're just one of those teams that they're going to keep fighting. They're going to keep battling. And you would think a team that goes up 3-0 and then loses three games in a row, and there's a Game 7 away, that team would just kind of crumble a little bit, that the team that forces the Game 7 would have all the momentum. Obviously, Game 6 was a crazy win where Derek White tips in a missed three at the buzzer to win the game to force Game 7. So you think the Celtics have all this momentum in the world, and the Heat came out with a tremendous game plan. They were able to hit their shots. Celtics did not shoot well whatsoever, and they end up losing. And, you know, I think the Celtics team was also pretty flawed. They shoot 40% in a game, they win. They shoot less than 40% in the game, and they're probably gonna lose. That was the story of the Celtics. And it's kind of just that tough, like, win, live and die by the three situation. And we saw that with the Celtics team, and it's true for a lot of teams. It's not just the Celtics, but you win by the three, you live by three, die by three. And so you see the Heat being able to take advantage of that. And that was what was crazy in Game 6 was The Celtics shot, I think, their worst 3-point percentage of the entire season in game six. And they end up pulling out that win. And so that's a whole nother reason where you're like, man, this is just the Celtics year. They're going to make the finals. Like, if they won that game, there's no way they're losing game seven at home. And yet they end up doing it. And I'm pretty sure that the Heat won like three. Well, yeah, because they won games. Yeah, they won three of their four wins in the Eastern Conference Finals were in Boston. So that's pretty impressive as well. So you can't count the Heat out. Jimmy Butler's a crazy. He's just going to go out there and battle, and he's not afraid of anybody. He's going to hit shots. He's going to hit tough shots. If you have guys like Caleb Martin stepping up, hitting shots, you got the resurgence of Duncan Robinson hitting threes. He missed some wide open threes in game six that would have put the game away there, but for the most part, he's been shooting really well and stuff. And then you potentially get Tyler Hero back by game three at home. I don't, again, I think the Nuggets are the heavy favorites, but a lot of people will probably count the Heat out in terms of like who's actually going to win. I don't see it going seven games. I could see the Heat pushing six games. I mean, look at how they, you look back to how they pushed the Lakers back in 2020, and I wouldn't have expected the Lakers to have to. I would have expected that. I think I chose them to win that series in five games because I mean they'd beat the Nuggets in five. They'd beat all their other opponents in five. I thought for sure they could take down the Heat in five, and they forced a game six. And a lot of it was on the backs of Jimmy Butler just playing his mind out and going all playing all game, playing extremely hard, and that's just who he is. So he's going to give you a chance with how hard he plays and all that stuff. So it'll be a fun finals. It'll be nice to have a stress-free finals, not having to worry about the Celtics potentially winning and all that stuff. And the thing is, like with the Nuggets, I don't hate them. I don't feel. I feel like most Lakers fans don't hate them or don't, have a whole lot of disdain for them. I feel like obviously it sucks that the Lakers lost to them, and I'm mad that the Lakers lost. But for the most part, they're a pretty likable team. Jokic, he's had some anger things where like he cheap shotted. I think it was Markieff Morris. When he was on the Heat like last season or two seasons ago, he's had a few things like that where it's like, okay, that's a little dirty. But for the most part, he kind of just puts his head down and plays, and he doesn't really care about the spotlight. He just wants to play basketball and play well and all that stuff. So a lot of respect there. Same thing with Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray, it's annoying how good he shot the basketball against the Lakers, but you can't hate that. Like, that's just good basketball. It's good shot making. It's really impressive. And then same thing goes for like KCP and Michael Porter Jr. and like those timely threes that I talked so much about that they were hitting against the Lakers. It's like you just can't hate good basketball. It's impressive. So I don't really have a whole lot of hate for this Nuggets team. And then the same thing for the Heat. Like Lakers played against the Heat. A lot of these guys, like I mean, it's not the exact same team, right? But it's like Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, and not really a whole lot of hate. Like I just respect. They put their heads down, play good basketball, and it's going to be a good. I think it'll be a good series with a lot of good basketball being played. Not to say that it wouldn't be if the Lakers were in it or if the Celtics were in it, but it's just one of those series where it's like you got a lot of basketball players that just want to play ball. There's not a whole lot of ulterior motives and all that stuff. And I guess like when LeBron's in the playoffs and in the finals, like you get a lot of these like storylines, whether it's created by him or created by the media. Here it's like you have just Jimmy Butler, who's playing out of his mind as the eighth on an 8 seed team. You have Nikola Jokic, who's the best, playing like the best player in the NBA. You have Jamal Murray, who is playing like he's one of the best guards in the NBA. There's just a lot of good basketball storylines and not a whole lot of like off the court storylines, which is fun. So it'll be a fun NBA Finals. I'm looking forward to it. Obviously bummed that the Lakers aren't in it, but I'll take it. So shifting things a little bit, I saw on Twitter, this is just, I'm going back to something I talked about in my last episode. So I went to the game, to game four, close game, really good game. Obviously a bummer that the Lakers lost, but really good game. And late in that game, it was tied 111 to 111. There's a minute left in the game. The ball goes out of bounds. Looks like it went off Murray, but it was on the other side of the court from where I was sitting, so I couldn't really see it. They played the replay on the Jumbotron, and it looked like on the one replay I saw that it went off Jamal Murray or went off the Nuggets, so it should have been Lakers ball. The referees award the ball to the Nuggets. Nuggets go and score 113 to 111, and that's how the game ended. It was 113 to 111. Lakers couldn't get another basket. And Lakers lose the series. And in the moment, I'm like, why isn't Darvin Ham challenging this? Like, it looks like it's close enough. It's a tie game. Lakers are in a spot where you could win the game. Challenge it. Like, what else are you waiting for the challenge for? And giving him the benefit of doubt, I'm like, well, maybe he was waiting for a play. Like, if a play like what happened against the Celtics in the regular season, where LeBron goes to try and win the game or tie the game, and he gets fouled, but they don't call it. But then he goes down, and LeBron drove to the basket for the last shot and got tied up and stuff, and it wasn't a foul. There's people on Twitter that think like, oh yeah, they should have called a foul. That was a missed call, because you see a still screenshot of Jamal Murray, his hand on LeBron's forearm. But if you watch the play, it's really just Jamal Murray's hand kind of sliding down his forearm as he's going to the ball. It's like, if they called that a foul, that'd be extremely ticky-tack. So I don't think it was a foul, but that's being, last game of the season, why not just challenge it? Just see what happens. But he didn't do that either. So I'm like, what is he holding on to this challenge for? And so it comes out, I saw a tweet that they did their little 2-minute report or whatever on the referees for the game in game four. And the NBA came out and said that the referees got it wrong. The out of bounds play, it should have been Lakers ball. And again, who's to say the Lakers go down and score or whatnot, but they got their call wrong. And so what's Darvin Ham doing? Why is he not challenging this call? And are they seeing that, is he seeing this as like, we don't want to go to Denver for game five and just lose in Denver? Like, I don't understand the thought process there. I don't want to think that that's the thought process, that they don't want to play game five, but I don't understand. It seemed, I don't know. It just seems like, and I feel like people aren't really talking about it a ton, but it was definitely a bad coaching situation there, where you got to challenge that. Give your team the best shot to win a game, no matter what, no matter what the stakes are. You see the Celtics, they went and won 3 games in a row after going down 3-0. And were the Lakers going to do that against the Nuggets? Probably not, but you got to give your team the best chance to do that. And so I really don't understand why he did not challenge that call. And we got proof that it should have been challenged. They got the call wrong, and that would have given the Lakers another chance to go down and take the lead. Instead, they're playing behind again because the Nuggets went and scored on that possession, and Lakers end up losing the game. So it is what it is at this point, right? But it's just an interesting thing with Darvin Ham, right? They called fans on Twitter and stuff call him like hands in pockets or pockets or whatever, because he's just kind of like, doesn't call timeouts, doesn't substitute, or if he does substitute, it's like he's taking out guys that are actually have momentum or hitting shots, not challenging play. It just, I don't know, it just kind of interesting. And one of those things where he's a rookie head coach, and I think overall in the playoffs, Darvin Ham did a pretty good job for being a first time head coach. But that's one thing that kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. You end the season in a game where you in a series where you get swept in the last two possessions, you can't get a good shot off. I mean, LeBron got a shot off where he hit the side of the backboard. You can't get a shot off on the last possession with 4 seconds left. And then you're not challenging a crucial call with 1 minute left in the game. I don't know. Something to learn from, I suppose, or I hope, but definitely a bummer there in that situation. I would have liked to see him challenge that call. And it was one of those things where a lot of times I don't like to be, one of those guys that's like a couch coach or whatever, where I'm just saying that like Darvin Ham should have done this, he should have done that, should have done this. And I get that's kind of part of the point, like part of me having this podcast is me kind of just talking about whether, what the Lakers should have done, what they did well, those types of things. And so I kind of do it a little bit just because of the podcast. But I like to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, there's got to be something that they know that I don't know, right? They have the replay there. They're seeing it. They have coaches that are, their job is to see the replay. So maybe it's not Darvin Ham. Maybe it's the assistant coach whose job it is to look at the replay and tell them whether or not to challenge it. But this is one of those moments where, like, I was right. In the moment, even in the moment, in the stands, at the game, with a bad angle, I was right that they should have challenged it. And so it's one of those things where it's like, again, I like to give them the benefit of the doubt, but in a situation where you kind of question a decision and then it ends up being the thing that you're questioning ends up being the way it should have been, kind of just, it's a bummer, right? Like, I would have rather seen them challenge it and all that stuff. So just wanted to bring that up because we talked about it a little bit in the last episode, and I wasn't really sure. I was curious what everyone else, like, kind of what Twitter thought and what different fans thought. Like, should he have challenged it? Would it have been a good call? And again, Maybe you're saving it for something else, but I don't know. I feel like in that moment, there's a minute left. Just use the challenge. You need the extra possession and to hopefully garner momentum. Because momentum, like the Lakers had momentum. They're making a comeback. The arena was super loud. The fans were into it. And then the Nuggets get the ball back and score, and it kind of just deflated things a little bit. So, yeah, would have liked to see the challenge, but it is what it is. And so we are here in the off season because Lakers couldn't win in the Western Conference Finals, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the Lakers should do, what they should make the team, how they should kind of construct the team for next season, what I think what I think will be best, like what will make them look the best, how they'll play the best, things like that. So, I think the number one thing that they need to look at is bringing in a formidable big to play alongside Anthony Davis. I think Anthony Davis, we've been playing around with Anthony Davis at the five, which in theory, Anthony Davis at the five is extremely dangerous and he could really hurt teams like that. But I really think Anthony Davis, especially offensively, is at his best when he's playing at the four. This is what we saw in the 2019-2020 season, then the 2020-2021 season, where you had JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard playing alongside him. You had JaVale McGee in the starting lineup for most of the regular season in that 2019-2020 season. And then they brought in Marc Gasol in the 2020-2021 season to play alongside Anthony Davis. And, I think Anthony Davis is just at his best when he is playing alongside another big. It kind of gives him more. You would think that it would clog things up a little more, but I think he likes that. Well, one, it pulls a big defender off of him, and it creates a mismatch, whether it's on Anthony Davis or on the other big. I think Anthony Davis is at his best when he's stretching the floor a little more. With him at the five, especially with these three-guard lineups that the Lakers played with this season, you have him just like attacking the basket a lot, which is good when he's on, but when he's not making his layups, or if he's just missing his little floaters, or if he's going up against a guy like Jokic who's just bigger than him and can kind of bully him down low, you want to stretch the floor. Like, give him a 15-foot mid-range jumper. Let him go out to the three-point line even. Get him into a triple threat situation where he can drive, shoot, pass, and figure it out from there. When you constantly have him going to the basket, it's like he's a crazy athlete, so it's hard to guard him, but it's easily solvable from a defensive standpoint. Like, just get in his way and hope he misses. And when he does miss, that's why I think we saw him have such tough offensive games during the playoffs, where like every other game, right, he has like a 30-point game and then he has a 12-point game. And I think a lot of it is just it's kind of solvable from a defensive standpoint, but if you have him triple threat, mid-range to three-point situation, not every possession, but on some of them, I think it helps create some problems for the defense. And I think having another big, having a five out there helps. And so it'll be interesting to see what the Lakers do in the offseason. Do you bring back Mo Bamba? Do you go and try and get someone like Brook Lopez? Do you try and go get someone like Miles Turner? And I feel like the ideal situation would be Brook Lopez, but I feel like that's also pretty unrealistic because I don't think the Lakers have enough to pay what Brook Lopez would need. So maybe someone like maybe you make a trade for Miles Turner. I saw on Twitter from Lakers Vino Uncorked on Lakers Twitter posted some screenshots from an article from The Athletic where they're laying out a potential trade for Miles Turner. Could you trade Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba and the 17th round or the 17th overall pick for Miles Turner? Because, Miles Turner, you get like a 3-and-D big where he can play defense. He plays good defense. He can shoot the three. I think he shot 37% last season. And, you get two versatile bigs in Anthony Davis and Miles Turner playing alongside each other, which would be pretty cool. And then from a free agency standpoint, maybe if you don't, or maybe if you do, but maybe if you don't get Turner, you have Naz Reid, who I've seen I saw on Twitter that the Lakers are kind of interested in him on the Timberwolves. He's another guy that can 3-and-D kind of guy. He's only 23 years old. Dwight Powell, Xavier Tillman, who we played against on the Grizzlies, Andre Drummond, Jock Landale, Bismack Biyombo, some other bigs that you could play alongside Anthony Davis, which none of those are as interesting as Miles Turner or Brook Lopez. Well, Naz Reid kind of is. But the rest of those guys are more maybe off the bench filler kind of guys. Or maybe they start and play a role kind of like, again, like JaVale McGee did in that 2019-2020 season. But I really think the Lakers need to go back to that. And so I think a big is the primary focus to bring in. Some of that's an actual big, not like a Wenyen Gabriel or Tristan Thompson that are undersized. You know, you need someone that's actually big that can bang, because like Anthony Davis he's a great defender, but I think he's at his best when he's a little slimmer, he can move a little better, and he's not having to worry about banging with like guys like Nikola Jokic. Not to say that he can't, but it's just not his strong suit. And I think bringing in a big that can take care of those types of things frees up energy and just things for Anthony Davis to do more offensively, and again, can then kind of float around on the defensive side of things. And then the other thing the Lakers need to bring in is 3-point shooting. So that's where the question comes in with like D'Angelo Russell. Do you bring back D'Angelo Russell? I mean, there's been a ton of ties to the Lakers trying to go after Kyrie Irving, but I feel like that's not realistic. I think I saw that the Mavericks said that they're not going to help Kyrie out with a sign and trade to get him to go wherever he wants. So, and even with a sign and trade, I think Kyrie would have to still take less, would have to sign for less to play for the Lakers, just because the Lakers don't have a ton of cap space. So the Kyrie Irving thing is probably not the most realistic, although things happen, people figure things out. Maybe he would take a pay cut. And the thing is with D'Angelo Russell, it's like he's not. It's tough. Like, I don't think he's a championship level. I don't know if he's a championship level guard. I mean, I think playing alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis can really lift him up and help him be that kind of guy. And also playing alongside Austin Reeves. Maybe I'd like to see D'Angelo Russell shift more to like a shooting guard, right? Make Austin Reeves the full-time point guard, make him the guy that's handling the ball most of the time outside of like LeBron and Anthony Davis. Have D'Angelo Russell play a little more off the ball, have him be more of a little like a spot-up shooter. Although, you know, D'Angelo Russell's really good with his dribble up, off the dribble threes that he does also. So like, you know, have the ball in his hands a little bit. It'll be interesting to see the guard situation with the Lakers, right? Like, are we able to bring back Dennis Schroeder? What is his market value now? Lonnie Walker, again, D'Angelo Russell, who, you know, without D'Angelo Russell, the Lakers probably aren't making it this far in the playoffs. They probably don't make the Western Conference Finals. Like, he was, you know, he had a rough playoffs. He wasn't super consistent in the playoffs, but regular season, he was crucial, especially with LeBron James being out. He had some big games again in the playoffs, and then the Western Conference Final, he sucked. And maybe that helps the Lakers. You know, maybe him not being great in the Western Conference Finals makes his market value a little cheaper, and they can re-sign him for, you know, a little less than what he might have gone for otherwise if he played really well. So maybe it helps the Lakers, but I think he does provide 3-point shooting, which is helpful. Troy Brown Jr., can we bring him back as like a 3-and-D guy that we can continue to develop? And you know, I mean, he's not a great 3-point shooter. He's a pretty good defender, but if you can bring him back for you know, close to a minimum type deal, that'd be great. Jared Vanderbilt's already on contract for about $4 million next year, which is, you know, good to get his defense. I mean, he's not, if he could develop a 3-point shot, that'd be awesome. But from the 3-point shooting standpoint, you know, you think of guys like Seth Curry. Could you bring in a guy like Seth Curry? But what's nice is like if you could bring in like a Naz Reid, again, Brook Lopez, Miles Turner, I feel like those are not the most realistic, but it's possible. If you could bring in a guy like that's like a 3-and-D big, they stretch the floor and provide 3-point shooting, which is beneficial. And then yeah, D'Angelo Russell, you know, he's a good 3-point shooter. He can, and you know, maybe D'Angelo Russell isn't a great playoff player. Maybe he's the guy that you need on the team for the first, you know, for the 82 game season, right? He, night in, night out, will go out and score points for you and that kind of stuff, especially with, you know, LeBron James aging and all that stuff. And speaking of LeBron James, in my last episode, LeBron James had talked about potentially retiring and rethinking his situation with the Lakers. I think I saw reports saying that, like, he will, you know, expect him to be back, which I think most of us thought for sure would be the case. Like, he'll be back. So, you know, LeBron James back, but also with this foot injury, like, who knows, you know, if he needs surgery and when he'll be able to play. If it'll be like, if he's not available till like December or something, then you need someone like D'Angelo Russell who can create shots and create stuff. You know, there's rumors right after the Lakers lost about them going after like Trae Young, which he's a guy that can create offense, and he's not quite as good of a shooter as he used to be, but I think he led the league in assists this past season, so he can create offense in that sense, and could be a guy that could step up with LeBron James taking more of a back seat, kind of like what we saw in the playoffs. So there's a lot of options for the Lakers. Again, I'm not saying that the Trae Young thing is super realistic, or even the Brook Lopez or Miles Turner thing, but you never know. I mean, I feel like the Lakers have a way of making things happen, and we'll see. But I think really with the offseason, the priorities number one and two, 1A, 1B, however you want to look at it, is bringing back Austin Reeves, who's a restricted free agent, which means the Lakers can match any deal that any offer that a team sends him. And then same thing with the Rui Hachimura. Rui Hachimura's 1B or 2. And he's also a restricted free agent, so the Lakers can match any offer that he's given as well. So it'll be interesting to see what the Lakers' threshold is. You know, if there's a team out there that offers Austin Reeves over $20 million a year in a contract, is that something that the Lakers will match, or do they not view him as being worth it? I would say the Lakers have to do whatever they can to bring back Austin Reeves. Rui Hachimura, on the other hand, I don't know. I mean, is he worth more than $20 million a year? Is that what his market is? Well, is there a team out there that's willing to pay him that? Is there a team out there that's willing to offer him that just to see if the Lakers match it and then tie the Lakers up in money issues? You know, like, who knows? I feel like the Lakers, but I feel like Rui Hachimura is one of those guys. Like, if he continues to develop his 3-point shot, it could be a really good 3-and-D type wing that, again, could also fill the space for LeBron, which we kind of saw him do in the playoffs and whatnot. So I think Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, their priorities 1A and 1B. And then you look at bringing a big, right? Do you trade for Miles Turner? Do you try and sign Brook Lopez? Is Brook Lopez willing to take a little bit of a pay cut to come to LA to play and try and play for another championship? I mean, he's already on the Bucks, who's a championship contender, so maybe that doesn't mean too much for him. Can you get a guy like Naz Reid? Or is it someone, or are we looking more at someone like Bismack Biyombo, or, you know, a lower tiered big? And that's fine. I mean, like, the Lakers did really well with Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, who were viewed as lower tiered bigs at the time. And so I think that I feel like that's a little more realistic, that we see them bring in someone like that. Maybe we hold on to Mo Bamba, who's young, who's a guy that, you know, has a decent 3-point shot if he can continue to develop it. If he can kind of get a little more development on the defensive side of things, like, he could turn into something that could be good. He's a good young guy if he can stay healthy and all that stuff. So it'll be really interesting to see what the Lakers do. But I think, yeah, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, a big to play alongside Anthony Davis, and then focusing on 3-point shooting and defense is really what the Lakers need to focus on this offseason. And I think we'll see something along those lines happen this offseason. It's just a matter of who's it going to be. Is LeBron going to push for Kyrie Irving? Is he going to push for Trae Young? Or is he going to be okay with smaller moves to bring in just more depth and more defense and someone that can play alongside Anthony Davis and all that good stuff? So this will be one of many. I'm going to try and keep pushing out weekly podcasts to talk about the Lakers and the offseason moves and all that good stuff. So I appreciate you guys all for listening. It's going to be a fun off season. We have the draft coming up. It'll be interesting to see what the Lakers do with that 17th pick. Do they hold on to it? Do they use it as a trade piece? So we have the draft coming up, and then obviously free agency and stuff. So a lot of more good stuff to come, even with the season being over for the Lakers. NBA finals start tomorrow on Thursday, June 1st. So that's exciting. Something to kind of, again, stress-free watch with the Nuggets and the Heat. I thank you guys all so much for listening, and go Lakers. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lakers Carpool. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts and share it on social media with your friends. You can find the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or most places where you listen to podcasts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and go Lakers.
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers!